Alex Dubois from our Cork studios in Opera Lane today. Let's talk about the labour institutions and agreements that are in place in this country, and a bit of a general discussion really about how much they should be reviewed even more so than they have been already, based around this idea that the staff out in RTE are going to receive wage increases more than €1,000 annually. This got Ivan very aggrieved on the breakfast show this morning. An internal industrial relations tribunal ruled the pay increments, which were suspended at the beginning of the year, are to be reinstated. That's despite the fact the company is facing a deficit of €30 million this year. I mean, we're not going to single out the RTE staff for this in particular. It's more the idea that the increments are going to be paid. There are many problems with the way labour institutions are operating here, how they work. Gerald Flynn is an employment specialist with Align Management Solutions, and he joins me on the line. Good afternoon to you, Gerald.
Afternoon, Jonathan.
First off, this issue went out in RTE. Tell us how this happened, because the increments were suspended at the start of the year. I think everybody accepted, you know, RTE's financial situation not great, facing a deficit of €30 million. So therefore, it was obvious enough that, you know, the increment wasn't going to be paid. But then that decision was reversed. How did that happen?
Well, what happened actually is it's part of a wider agreement to meet the financial crisis in RTE. The RTE staff agreed to wage cuts back in 2009, and there also part of that package was an agreement to a freeze on increments, which would be long service increments paid to staff. Generally, the more lower paid staff out of the 2,000 in RTE would have affected about 600 people. And the freeze on the increments basically expired back in June of last year, June 2010. But the management then unilaterally suspended payment of increments back in January of this year. And the unions then responded by referring it to an internal industrial relations tribunal. And they appear to have found that it was in breach of an agreement. In other words, there had been an agreement to freeze them for a year. But then after unfreezing them for a few months, the management reimposed the freeze without agreement.
Now, I'd imagine the staff are very happy to be getting this €1,000 increment, but is there a kind of a mass hysteria at the moment that always comes about when we hear of somebody working in the public sector getting an increase of any kind, and is that fair in its own right?
Well, throughout the public service, obviously there have been pay cuts, whereas the great majority of employees have experienced pay freezes, but not pay cuts, especially in the private sector. Apart, of course, from those who've lost their jobs and have had the ultimate pay cut. But under the Croke Park Agreement, there's acceptance of the pay freezes and the pension levy, but increments continue. So some civil servants and public servants this year will be earning more than they were last year because they will be paid the increments. Now, in RTE's case, I think about 1,200 of the staff are either self-employed contractors, like some of the very high-paid people earning anywhere between 300 and 600,000 a year. The people we're talking about are more likely to be earning about 40 to 50,000 a year and to have been working with the company for less than 10 or 12 years.
Anne in Dublin's texted in to say increments are still being paid to the public service as part of the Croke Park deal. I know, I get them. So when Anne is talking about those, she's just reiterating that point. So how much money are we talking with these increments? Are there, is it small fry? Is it in line with inflation? Or who decides what the increment is?
Well, if we take the increments in RTE, it's going to be about just over an average of €1,000 a year, which is about 2% increase for somebody on 50,000. It's welcome, but since inflation is going to be about 2%, it more or less keeps them ahead with inflation. But obviously they're carrying the pay cuts that were agreed back in 2009 and 2010. But increments aren't nearly as common in the private sector. Quite often in a lot of private sector, you might get a long-term, long-service benefit, but usually that might be one or two additional days' holidays. So if you had 24 days holidays, maybe after 10 years in the company, you might have 26 days holidays.
Yeah. Well, OK, look, I mean, hey, I work in the private sector. I don't get an increment. I never have. But I'm just wondering, is it because we don't get them and that's why we're so aggrieved over the fact that people in the public sector are getting them?
Well, it's just it's a different way of structuring. Basically, public...
Is it a better wage, Gerald?
Not necessarily. But people in the public service are all on the same wage, whereas in the private sector, quite often, people negotiate their own packages that kind of reflect the market or reflect the skills that they have or that the company wants, right? So in the private sector, you could be earning 45,000 a year, and somebody sitting beside you doing practically the identical job could be earning 52,000 a year.
The point that people will make is that oftentimes these increments are not made based on performance. They're just based on the fact that you're an employee that has been there for X period of time. So if we're going to reform this, is that a better way of doing it?
It certainly might well be. Obviously, these to some extent are birthday increments, and the only qualification you need is to keep breathing for another 12 months and you'll get them, right? Whereas if they were tied in maybe with performance, it would be better. Now, in the public service in the last few years, they have brought in an element of performance management. If you are particularly bad and have received various warnings and not sort of addressed them over your performance or attendance or whatever, you may be deprived of your increment. And that was a kind of a new step brought in the last 4 or 5 years. But generally, most people get their increments for sort of, as I say, turning up for yet another year.
But look, let's go back to this idea of privileged days, the days that you would have had off that were dreamt up in a bygone era that had absolutely no relevance on modern working practices, right? 4.6 million was going to be saved, or some large figure was going to be saved by getting rid of these. Went to an arbitration board. The arbitration board said, no, you can't do that. And we were back to square one. So, I mean, where does the problem lie within this
system? Not quite, Jonathan. The arbitration board said you can't or shouldn't do it in isolation, but perhaps you should do it as part of a wider reform, right? The arbitration board was looking at it purely in the civil service. This gets back to the controversial the King's Birthday and Empire Day that were translated into two privilege days for a lot of public servants who now avail of it around Christmas time. And what they said is it needs to be addressed more widely. Since then, the focus of attention has been on some long holidays of up to 8 weeks a year enjoyed by some senior public servants and some people in the health sector, and the government plans to address that. But really, we need a root and branch review, not only of the public service reforms, but also our industrial relations or employment relations processes and how they're dealt with as well, because they're coming to a bit of a standstill. The LRC has snowed under. Its recent report last week indicated that it's dealing with over 1,000 disputes a month. That's in companies. And there's 15,000 rights commissioners hearings a year. And a lot of those deal with individual grievances. And quite often there are cases in the public and private sector where people have been managed badly or ill-treated or unfairly dismissed. So these areas are wide open for reform as much as the general public service reform.
Okay, well, the general public service reform, let's just focus on that for the moment.
Sure.
We have something that's supposed to fix that. It's the Croke Park Agreement. Now, we're all in general consensus that it's not happening as quickly as perhaps it should be, but at least it's happening. And if you listen to the unions on any particular day, they'll tell you of all the wonderful work that has been done to reform the issues that we're talking about.
Yeah, though I think the trade unions are looking at it through rose-tinted glasses to an extent. The flexibilities and reforms haven't been as extensive as one would have expected over a year ago. That's not necessarily all the union's fault. A lot of management have been very poor at actually engaging their employees or communicating the need and consulting with them about more flexibility. Secondly, the whole Irish public service is highly centralised, and quite often local authorities and health agencies have been afraid to move until they get a direction from the department. And thirdly, Jonathan, the big problem with the Croke Park Agreement is that there are no specific cost savings or targets or budgets involved in it. So it's very hard to know really what savings have been made purely under the flexibilities of the Croke Park Agreement. We can calculate what savings have been made to the public purse from the pay cut that was imposed last year and the pensions levy that was imposed 2 years ago.
And just to put some of the texts that have come in, 53106 for a cost of 30 cent. One texter says, I've had three pay cuts in the private sector totaling 30%. Another texter says, the IMF will have to sort out these overpaid, pampered civil servants. The cowardly government, the texter's words, not mine, won't. John in Limerick says, more anti-public service bile from News Talk. You will never beat us. Keep making the strong stand, John. I'm not anti-public service and never have been. And Dave in Wicklow says, not everybody gets increments. If you're at the top of the scale, you don't get everything. It's not every public servant gets an increment. So if you're at the top of the scale, you don't get anything. But presumably that's where you're on the big bucks anyway, and you're not relying on it, I would imagine, Jerry.
Well, that's right. Obviously, quite often these increments governments run out after about 10 years, and maybe after 15 years you would get one extra kind of a long service one. But the comments from your readers reflect this sort of artificial divide that has evolved over the last 2 years between public and private sector. Some people in the private sector have suffered greatly, and I referred to it earlier, they've actually lost their jobs, right? They'll take the ultimate pay cut, right? But the majority of people in the private sector who've kept their jobs haven't had a pay cut, but they've had pay freezes, and they may have lost overtime as well. The other thing is, in the public service, while we have some very high-paid people in areas like medicine and law and some of the professions, an awful lot of the average public servants are on modest enough wages, somewhere between the 35 to 45,000.
And I imagine, look, and if they get an increment, it's very welcome for them.
Well, actually, a lot are fairly hard-pressed, and that's what they kind of signed up for. So it's really, you could be an engineer who chooses to work in a local authority, and you're going to get a good salary of maybe 65 to 75,000 a year with some increments, right, to bring you up to the 75,000. Alternatively, 10 years ago, you could have gone into construction, and you might have been earning 110,000 a year, but now you'd find yourself unemployed, and you'd probably have to emigrate. So there's a balance between risk and reward over people choosing to work in the private sector or the public sector. And that's what we have to look at, the long game. But, I mean, in aligned management, we've always been advising managers to be upfront with people, to deal with their issues and problems, and if they're trying to introduce change, to communicate it and to engage people with the need for flexibilities and change in their organisation. And unfortunately, in our experience over the last year, this hasn't been as widespread in implementing the Croke Park Agreement as it should have been.
Okay, Gerald Flynn, Employment Specialist with Aligned Management Solutions. Thanks very much for that. 53106 is the number for your text.